We are going to go over our code of conduct policy.
I'll just read the introduction then. The National Federation of the Blind is a community of members and friends who believe in the hopes and dreams of the nation's blind. The Federation knows that blindness is not the characteristic that defines you or your future. Every day we raise the expectations of blind people because low expectations create obstacles between blind people and our dreams. You can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back. To help copy out the Federation's vital mission, or to carry out the Federation's vital mission, this code of conduct sets forth policies and standards that all associated with the Federation community, as defined below, are expected to adopt and follow. This written code was first established on January 26th of 2018 by the NFB Board of Directors, who review and update it regularly to reflect the current practice and the continuous feedback of Federation members. The strength of our Federation community depends upon each individual doing their part to uphold the commitments that we make through the principles outlined in this document. And then that's who must follow, which has already pretty well been said. Everybody who's part of the Federation or has some interaction with it. Adopting and implementing a strong code of conduct enables the Federation to carry out its vital mission. The standards set forth in this code apply to all members, employees, program participants, event attendees, contractors, and volunteers. Hereafter, all those subject to this code shall be referred to as covered parties. As a national policy, it applies to any national division, group, or committee, all state affiliates, all local chapters and divisions, and affiliates and other affiliate programs and the organization, et cetera. So, and NFB training centers, and it applies to both in-person and virtual settings and governs all interactions reasonably associated with NFB-sponsored events and activities. So anyway, I guess that's pretty well sums up with everybody. It's all of us. Yeah. So you got a mic there now? Okay.
Yeah, there we are. Look at that. Oh, so they don't feedback? It seems to be going okay,
Okay.
as long as I don't start pointing it at him. Okay. So, Brian, thank you for that. It is very important. And Kevin, just to make sure I'm aware, how long do we have to have a conversation about this?
We're really ahead of schedule, so you've got as much 11 o'clock by the clock. Yes.
Okay. All right. So I will just give sort of a brief summary of this. And Brian is absolutely right that this is to promote a sense of belonging within the organization, a sense of safety within the organization, and it applies to all of us. But I'm going to give you some real talk. There are two reasons that a code of conduct exists. One, because it needs to, because certain things that maybe people didn't think were harmful actually might be harmful. And the other is to challenge biases and preconceptions and to get people to think about maybe things that they haven't otherwise considered before. As, when the code of conduct rolled out and we started to do some training around this, one of the things that we did as leaders in the organization is training on what is called implicit biases. And the idea of implicit biases is to make sure that you challenge the things that you think that you know. When, particularly in times of stress or fatigue, we tend to fall back on our regular ways of doing things. And as a personal example, when I was planning my agenda in 2021, I got done with my agenda and I looked over it and I saw the 3 days, and every single speaker on my affiliate was a white person over the age of 50. And there is nothing wrong with being a white person over the age of 50. But Minnesota is a diverse place. We have a tremendous native population. 13% of our population is Black or African American. There is a tremendous population of people who are Hispanic or Latino, right? And we want to make sure, because people's lived experiences are different. One of the ladies in our affiliate emigrated here from Liberia. She practices Islam and different cultural traditions around blindness as a Muslim growing up in Liberia is that the expectations of blindness for her were very different than they were for us in Minnesota. But her story is very real and very important and also is probably true for some of the refugees who came to Minnesota. So when I took a look at my agenda and I made that realization, because I was planning it with maybe less lead time than I should have, it caused me to take a moment and go, no, there are lots of perspectives that we need to make sure that we encompass within the organization. And that, I imagine, is true for people here in Alaska as well. You have a tremendous native population. You have people who have emigrated here from other countries, from other places, even in the United States. You have a divide between, say, people who live in villages and people who live in larger cities, people who live in the interior versus people who live on the coast. They have different challenges. They have different lived experiences, and this is a way to remind us to make sure that we highlight those. The rest of it is stuff which, you know, it should be common sense, but sometimes we know common sense ain't common. And also, it's just a good reminder of how to be a good person. I'll give you an example. The alcohol and drug policy. It says, you know, essentially, look, we understand that alcohol is going to be served at some federation functions, but don't get drunk and crazy, right? This should be obvious, but for some people it's not. And so we write it down. The other thing, don't serve alcohol to minors. Also, again, self-explanatory, but the reason people need a reminder of this is because sometimes that sort of stuff has happened or there have been rumors of it. And we need people to know that as a member of this organization, we hold ourselves to a high standard. The other thing, you know, that I'll highlight is the social media and web policy. And it basically says, look, if you're the president of the organization, if you hold a leadership position and you have thoughts about the Federation, just make sure people understand what is your personal view and what is the view of the organization. That way we can sort of disagree in places where it's right to disagree, and that we're not sending mixed messages to the public, potentially if there are disagreements that spill over onto social media. As Brian said, there's lots of sections to this. There are, you know, when I pull it up on my phone, it's about 40 screens long. It is worth reading because as a member, you agree to it. But this is not meant to cause groupthink. It's not meant to create a situation where all of us have to behave the same way or believe the same things. Diversity is important. And it is important whether you are, you know, regardless of your skin color, regardless of your orientation, your gender, your age, many, many other things that you might be defined by or that might be part of your identity. We want everybody to be welcome, and it is a way to make sure that people are. You know, yeah, that's a good question. You may have to turn your mic on, but let's talk about, if you wouldn't mind, the violations and reporting procedures. Those last two, those are really good for people to know.
Well, and another good thing to know is that
Anchorage, Alaska is the fifth most diverse city in America. And that's something quite to be proud of. We've got many different races, ethnicities. So this code of conduct policy is great to have. And I stand behind it 100%. You know, how we conduct ourselves as a direct representation of who and how we interact with our personal life, our business life. You know, myself, my political views, what I put out on X or Twitter, I got to be mindful of what I'm saying and what I'm doing. And I encourage everybody else to be mindful of it. I mean, I see stuff all the time where individuals say something derogatory, racist, or whatever, and come to find out the place they work at doesn't support those views. And next thing you know, they're in some hot water over their personal views on something. So we got to be careful and mindful because, you know, we represent a very small portion of the population, and everybody seems to, you know, notice us as blind people and our conduct. So let's be mindful of our actions and how we carry ourselves. And, you know, I believe I like to set a good example, and I like others to follow said example. So,
okay. Yeah, it is now. Okay. So, you wanted us to look at the violations and report procedures, violations and reporting procedures. That is down a ways. That's looks like section 11, violations and reporting procedures, violations of this code of conduct after first being established through the process set forth below are subject to disciplines or disciplinary action by the Federation. Such disciplinary actions may include, but are not limited to, counseling, verbal and or written reprimand, probation, suspension, or termination of office / leadership duties and or suspension or expulsion from the Federation. The below procedures detail how the NFB Board of Directors intends to carry out its responsibilities under Article 3, Section E of the Federation's Constitution. And reporting. So regardless of how they are filed, all reports regarding violations of this code will lead to the same response procedures as outlined below. All reports of violations of this code of conduct can be filed in one of the following ways. So it can be, completing an online code of conduct reporting form, also sending an email to code@nfb.org, leaving a voicemail, and there's a phone number here, and it's 410-659-9314. Extension 2475. I think since this code is available online and it was sent out to folks, I don't think it's a big deal that we get this in the chat at this spot, but it can be found if you want it. Or giving or a verbal report to a designated responsible leader of the Federation. Responsible leaders include national board members, affiliate board members, local chapter or division board members, national division board members, Federation employees and staff or board members of NFB affiliated training centers. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Brian.
All right.
I'm going to come
Brian,
up here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
He's the perfect voice for it, man.
He does.
I do work in radio.
I love it.
Okay. So thank you very much, Brian. And coming up next, and sorry, Claudia, you've gotten kind of skipped around, but we do want to get you in here and hear about the BEP program. Does anybody have any questions in regards to the code of conduct policy? You know, and as affiliate board members, we will be the ones to reach out to for any complaints or anything that might be troubling you, something that's taken place. Feel free to come to me, come to another board member. I have an open door, open book policy, and I'd like to think everybody else does too. We don't want anything kept in the dark, no secrets. We want everything out in the light. Sunlight is what's best for all. And if you have any questions, anything you'd like to talk about, please feel free to speak up now. Does anybody have any questions in regards to the code of conduct policy? All right. Well, and just a heads up, here in a little while, I think we're going to have an opportunity to go over our constitution, our affiliate constitution. So, and that was also sent out to everybody on the link as well. Again, we're kind of flipping the agenda around a little bit. Kelsey will be in after lunch to do her presentation. I know Claudia was scheduled to come up. I'd have to look at the agenda to see exactly where we're at and the time is. And we have Claudia. Okay, great. So let's let Michael Loft do his presentation, and we'll get Claudia up after that. And I'll try and pay a little closer attention to the agenda I know there was a I'll look at it. So, again, we got Michael Lauf coming up. He's our online IT specialist. He's our website coordinator. He does some amazing things for us. He's made it available for everybody to register online, put our agenda online, and updated our website. So with that being said, let's hear it from Michael Lauf.
All right. Thank you. Hopefully you can hear me okay. I got to watch. Actually, I'm echoing through my earbuds, so let me pop up my hearing aids. Okay, there we go. So what I want to talk about, I'm going to call it my taco speech, because we're going to talk about a little bit about technology, some advocacy, some communications, and outreach, because those are all things that we do as we have to communicate and get things done, go through life and build what's called our skill stack of all the experiences that we've shared. So I want to focus on what I've done a lot in the last year and a half, and that is to take over and manage an older blind program here in the community of Belleville, Illinois. I'm a suburb of St. Louis, so I'm three counties in St. Louis, and there's another center that covers the rest of this metropolitan area. And the reason I want to talk about that is, you know, at 60, you kind of think you've got everything figured out, right? What else could you learn about blindness and low vision? Well, let me tell you something. When you take a job like that, older blind program, you learn quite a bit. Not just the eye conditions, but all of the different emotional issues and the way that people come at it and the way that they cope or do not cope. Or so I just want to share some things that I've learned and, you know, maybe have a little discussion from a few of you in the room. I want to keep it to 15 minutes. But I think one of the things that I had to do is figure out outreach. How do we find the people who are eligible for our services? So that involves getting a little more into the mix of social media and just marketing. I've got my job because I contacted the local NFB chapter when I moved back in Indiana, and that's how I made that connection. So NFB can be that connection, that catalyst to help you find a career and vocation. So one of the things we do for outreach is we speak to law enforcement groups. They have a police academy here. So I'm kind of excited. It's one of my favorite things to do because I feel like we're really making a difference. But at first, I was really a few little hang-ups because I want to promote the blind and how great and awesome we are. But I also want to be realistic about what these officers may encounter. These are things that I learned from listening to other conventions and banquet speeches and people talking about how at first they didn't want to use their cane until they, you know, fell down some steps or something made that happen. So I explained that that could be the possibility. You have blind people that are very well adapted. You have some that just lost their sight and are kind of afraid to take those first steps. And you have a lot of people in transition who are denying their blindness. And then they get caught out in a storm or a little later than they hoped and can't see what's going on or unfamiliar territory, any number of things. We've all been there. So I want to talk about those things and let them know about interacting and not trying to guide them across the street, and about, you know, our service animals. And we tell them, hey, if you have to, do not separate this person from their dog. But if you have to, arrest the dog. We'll tell them that because, you know, we try to use the analogy of this dog is as valuable as your police canines. It serves a very dedicated purpose. That's its whole life, has been trained for that, and thousands have been spent, not to count the man hours. So we communicate those things, but I really like that part of the job. So we talk about things like assisting, whether it's reading the documentation that we may need to sign or whatever the situation. But I enjoy that work, outreach, and then going to different community groups. I found show and tell is fun, just pulling out all the different talking devices, all the thermometers and glucosometers, just everything, and showing those technologies, and people are interested in that. And then you'll find consumers, and just sometimes you have to plant the seed, right? It's all about word of mouth. So, hey, I realize maybe none of you in this room today need this, but maybe you have a family member or a friend or someone at church. You have to put those ideas out there when you're looking. Say, look, maybe what we do doesn't affect you personally, but hey, let folks know of our services, and we're helping the blind, and we're helping them to learn the skills for independence. One of the other things I take a lot of pride in doing is access technology training. but it's not feasible to always go out to their home every time. So I highly encourage, if any of you do that, and Alaska's a big state with a lot of places that aren't easy to get to, is looking at the technology I use. It was made by the blind, low vision for the blind, and it's called Remote Incident Manager. And it lets you get on your computer, and they get on. We have an agreed password, and it makes it quite simple. We can connect, you can hear, you can speak in real time with them, but also can have full control of their computer. So you can jump in and assist them as needed, do software updates, whatever you have to do. An amazing tool for remote training. I don't know of anything better. If you're in my situation of, you know, not having any eyesight and need a screen reader, there is no better tool out there. So it's worth its $99 a year. But the thing that's I'm amazed the most is there is no, you know, one size fits all when it comes to magnifiers. I got a new colleague and she's like, oh, this is the best magnifier. And it is good. It's a company called Ray Hong. You can get it on Amazon for $199 and it's 5 inches and has all the different contrast modes. So you can set whatever colors persons need and you can go from 2 to 32X. But you still have to know that that's not going to work for everyone. So it's just amazing trying to understand those, but also meeting people when they're ready and doing that little TLC, right? The tough love conversation. Look, I know you're trying to hold on to the eyesight for as long as you can, but let's start talking about learning to see with your hands. And just kind of, and I had a lady the other day and her daughter said, yeah, she uses her feet to kind of see what's going on and find things. And I'm like, okay, yeah, those are tools. And what really bothers me is we can't provide proper O&M training because A, we just don't have any instructors in this area. We have to kind of negotiate with Missouri and they do a contract, they can outsource and some folks can get a few lessons or they have to go through the VR system, you know, to really get true service. And some of the folks have equipment already better than kind of what we can provide. But a lot of it's the information and referral. So working a lot on transportation. I just joined the transportation board. And one of the things I'm trying to get here is something they're doing in Chicago, the organization up there called PACE. And it allows people, instead of taking the paratransit vans, you could get these Uber vouchers. You pay the first $2 and they pay the next $28. So between $2 and $30. And then if your ride would be over $30, you would pay the difference. But this lets you travel to even some places I think that they technically don't cover, as I understand, and maybe they'll fix that little loophole. But anyway, so you can get to where you need to go when you need to go. You're not driving all over out of the way because either they have bad dispatching or drivers are new and they just don't know the routes yet and how to be efficient. So that's something I'm working on. I hope it can be successful. They said my county here of $250,000 is just, they think, large enough to do it. Some of the other smaller counties will not be, but trying to get the counties to interconnect to each other so that people can move between the various counties, get into our county, St. Clair, for doctor's visits and so forth. So, and the other thing is wording. I don't know if any of you know Yvonne Newbert, a very strong advocate in Tennessee. And she said something that stuck with me. She said, it's not, you're not going blind, you're becoming blind, and words matter. And that statement can be the aha moment and the flashlight for some people to really, okay, yeah, this is what I've got. And I will say, I try to keep religion and spirituality out of things, but if someone is strongly religious, then I will go there with the metaphor that this was, you know, maybe this was God's plan for you and he needed you to see the world in a different way. And some people that works. But that's always tough, right? That, and I'm always been a little remiss on trying to, because I've been blind my whole life. I tell people that. I said, look, I can't say honestly know exactly the struggles and challenges that you're going through. I can only tell you as someone who's been blind my entire life that if that shit happened, you know, you can still do all the things that you want or need to do. The key, I think, is to find their passion. What drives them? What is something that they used to do that they just feel they couldn't do anymore? And if you can make that happen, just like Kevin mentioned, skiing, whatever it may be. For some people, it's cooking. I'm a concern. I was disappointed. I thought more people would want to learn how to cook and build up those skills. But people are either content Just throwing things in the microwave. And of course, that's options now that we didn't have when some of us were young, right? But I've always found that, you know, I found this book on the NLS Bard. It's like great foods, great recipes with three ingredients or less. You can make great tasting things that have minimal cooking skills. So there's no reason to let that get in your way. So I'm excited. You have something like the center there where people can come in and get actual training in a kitchen. We don't have that kind of accommodation. I think they did in the past. But I would love that to kind of take them into the next level. But training, doing iPhone training. So one of the other things I've been doing is trying to stay up on the latest, greatest technologies. I mentioned this yesterday. Folks who enjoyed Bard, you can now play the books directly on your computer, your desktop or laptop computer. You just get the latest version of the software, and then you basically open the book, and then you press F2. You know, you download it first, and then go to your bookshelf, open it, press F2, and it starts playing, and you got commands to listen to your books that way. So I think it's exciting. I agree with Freya. It was years overdue, but I'm glad they've done it because it's another tool, and it's something we can help set up for people. And I'm allowed to set up people for the National Library Service Program and our local transportation system, and I work with them to get it so that the form is fully accessible. You can download it, fill it out electronically, and upload it. So I was proud to be a part of making that happen here for the transportation system, because it's still not a simple form. There's a lot of questions that they ask. But so I don't know. It's an ongoing, it's a learning process. We do outreach, just like you're mentioning, twice a month. They called it, before I got here, they called it New Seekers. So we do at least one in office, or people come in and they meet and they enjoy that, and they're all smiles, and we kind of have a presentation and leave the last half of it for people just to talk and interact. And that's something that, you know, folks really like. And then once we started doing that, we didn't really have any local interest in doing this online Zoom events only. So then we do some that are, we market to the nation as a whole. And I try to get presenters and cover other things, crafts and other things that, you know, people want to talk about. So I guess in short, what I'm saying is we're always learning. We always have to be dynamic, listen to people. Each person has their own story, their own unique experiences. That are the two things I think I learned from the whole DEI thing, was about A, meeting people where they are, and that we each have our own lived experiences, and two people could be in the same home. They could be twins even, or just a year apart, and have completely different lived experiences just based on not only their interactions on that home, but what they did in school and college and work and friendships and everything else. So it's important to meet people in all those places. So I'm about 15. I'm going to see if anyone has any questions or anything. But my point is to always have an open mind, keep learning. Real quick before I go, there's a cool app you can get for your iPhone called Magnifier. And I've been playing with that a lot because it lets you automatically read the text that's going on around you, whether it be on your TV screens or just actual text. You can hold up a piece of paper and it works really well. And there's also one that does scene description. It's a little verbose. It talks a little too much. It tries to describe what's going on around you. So then it starts making up stuff because it's literally trying to think of something to tell you every 2 seconds. But it's a cool tool. The Magnifier is an awesome tool, whether you just have reduced vision and need to adjust the contrast or set up the color filters, or you want to actually use it as a reader to read your computer screen, TV screen. I was reading stats of the World Series that the people were up to, you know, when they were up to bat, I was giving stats about them across the screen from Fox. So a lot of cool technology out there, always trying to learn. And, you know, if you ever have any questions, you can just send me an email, mike@lawfare.com. That's mike@lawfare.com. I have a website with accessible Windows software and some Android apps. I haven't really touched the iPhone because I know that'd be an ongoing support nightmare. And AppleVis has a good app directory if you want to know the latest and greatest for iPhone apps. I may come back and tackle it at some point, though, because I think there needs to be some way to say, here are the top three or four for travel, or the top three or four for banking, or that, you know. So, but anyway, I'm just working, got my hands in lots of different things, and hopefully something I said today was of use or value to you. Please reach out if you have any comments about anything, and thank you for allowing me to speak today. Look forward to enjoying the convention.
Michael, we have a question for you.
Okay, sure. Yes.
Test. Okay. Hello, Mr. Michael. This is Shaquille speaking.
Yes, sir.
I just want to hear your thoughts and opinions about Neuralink.
Neuralink? all about actually restoring vision?
Yes.
Specifically?
Yes.
Okay. Well, yes, folks may not know a lot about that. Elon Musk, the creator of Tesla and other enterprises, he started his Neuralink, which is a process to, I said, not only restore eyesight to some, but also just a process of using your brain and your thoughts to make actions happen. And we did some stuff like that when I worked at Serotech. You know, like 25 years ago, they had the devices like the Puff and Sip and things that you could use your mouth or kind of just look at the screen and make different things happen based on what you're looking at. So I'm excited about it. My thing, Shaquille, the thing that concerns me with that is when you have people who are in transition and their lives are on hold, I almost think sometimes it'd almost be better if someone lost their sight right away just so they could adjust and do what they have to do, because unfortunately, you know, they spend their whole life looking for the miracle drug. People keep asking about these magnifiers and this doctor and this vitamin, and we're all about getting the most from our eyesight. We certainly should, but it just concerns me if people are just totally afraid of, you know, acceptance and moving forward with it. But I think Neuralink is, I'm all for any technology out there. I would not want to be one of the first ones, because if you're electronically stimulating your brain, you certainly have the risk of seizures. That's what they had with some of the stuff a few years ago. I'm trying to remember the name of it, where they actually put electrodes on your tongue and they could see, you could see at least images or outlines of people, things like that. So I don't know, Shaquille. I'm all for any technology. I'm just not going to be the first in line to use it.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
So if an individual is new to blindness and is getting involved with DVR, what would be the best route to go to get training for accessibility? I know there's different schools out there. There's online things available. What would be a route, just some good information on how an individual could get involved with technical accessibility?
Okay. Well, I know a lot of it's state by state, so probably someone like Ryan there could better answer this, but I'll throw out my thoughts on this, that, you know, your key is to, you've got to get in that voc rehab system, because that's where the money is. But at least here in Illinois and other places now, you have to have some kind of career goal. You know, just maintaining your home in most cases isn't good enough. So you have to have something. So even if it isn't specific career, you better be running some kind of organization or group or doing something that's helping the community. But they really want that career focus now. So, and I see people kind of exploit that somehow too, where they get into it and they're really not doing a lot to for their career, but they get all kinds of free equipment and new laptops every 2-3 years. But so anyway, you've got to get in that voc rehab system, because that's the only way you get the funding. And I don't know if that's required to, I assume if they attend the center up there, or if people can go in private pay, but what that would even cost. So you've got to get in that voc rehab system, and even there you have to learn it, because at least here they seem to want multiple disabilities. So they get priority over having a single disability. So you have to think, okay, what are my challenges? You know, do I need this paratransit? Or so there's a whole art to that, but you have to learn to be an advocate. You have to speak up for yourself. Here's your needs. It really helps if you have goals, because that's what's going to make the difference of you getting in there and getting some kind of services. And if you just lost your sight, you may not be sure what that is, but the way you should know is something you want to do. And that's where you, right, you got to talk to them and says, what do you want to do again? What did you used to do? Do you want to work again? But it does bother me that if they don't specifically have employment goals, that a lot of people can be denied service who truly need it. They just may need a good go through walk over of their home and just get things kind of modernized. And, you know, the OIB, I always saw a lot of people thought it thinks it stands for the older independent blind. And so I was a little frustrated, because I thought, I'm going to teach everyone to use Uber and Lyft and buy their groceries and travel and do everything. Well, that wasn't as easy, or isn't as easy as it seems, but it's older individuals who are blind. So again, the wording, you have realistic expectations of what you're going to do. So I don't know if that really answered your question. you got to get in that system. You have to think, do I have a disability other than blindness? Do I, you know, do I have any hearing loss? Do I have any mobility challenges? Because those are all things that you have to use, which seems strange to me, but there seems to be a priority for multiple disabilities. So you got to play that whole game, right? But
yeah,
just,
I know.
We can help them with that. We can, you know, meet with them, assist them with that if they need it. But
yes. Yes, thank you, Mike. And I know getting involved with DVR is the first step. And then I also know that just receiving some of that basic tech training, and you hit the nail on the head. First things first, get involved with DVR. They've got the funding. They're going to get you to the training centers. And then should you want to pursue tech training, there's multiple avenues you can go about doing that. And, Michael, I want to thank you for giving us your time today and for being our tech guy online. Come on up, Claudia.
The BEP program has been around in ancient history almost, since in actuality it was started because so many people were blinded in World War I with mustard gas and the horrors of that strife that happened in Europe. But anyway, what happened is there is an act called the Randolph-Shepard Act, which started the business enterprise program initially. And people were so upset at seeing blind folks selling pencils on street corners that they decided to do something. So initially, the BEP program was in post offices and people sold, you know, sundries. It was basically a dry stand. There wasn't a fountain or anything like that. All things were packaged or newspapers, periodicals, whatever. And at that time, you know, cigars and cigarettes and everything. But anyway, in the 1970s, the program was expanded to cafeterias in federal buildings, dry stands, which are like Bill Meisner. I don't know if any of you knew him, but he ran a successful business at the federal building in Anchorage. And then now the BEP program has gone off even in more directions. Some states do roadside vending, and that's the whole business. So that's Ohio, as far as I know. And then there's a marketing situation where people can buy things from vending machines. So the actual, everything is automated. So it's like an automat setup. So there's a huge variety of venues that people can participate in, you know, through DVR. But to my story, you know, I was a preemie. I have retinopathy of prematurity. And I was in an incubator, and the incubator had malfunctions, so I got a little bit of vision in my right eye. So I just, you know, went through public school. I went to the School for the Blind 1 year in Kansas City. And, you know, I went ahead and went through college off and on. And I finally finished in a degree in home economics from Kansas State. But eventually my husband and I moved to Alaska and we came up to Juneau. And so when the BEP program initially came up, I was lucky that I had a big family and a lot of relatives and a lot of friends in Juneau. And it's a pretty small town. So it wasn't easy to find employees, but I'm proud to say that I was able to pay my employees more than the average bear. I just passed on my success to my employees because you want to keep them. So, I did the federal building in Juneau for 7.5 years. And then, I did this snack bar at the state office building, and it was, you know, completely two different things. It was the federal building had different politics than the state office building did, but it all worked out. You know, we met the challenges. We just decided we're going to work the 65-hour week. We're going to go to Costco and get our own goods and bring them back, as well as order from other suppliers. But it made more work for us, but it made more success too. And eventually we ended up doing all the vending machines in the state office building and the federal building, which wasn't really that many, but it helped us maintain our business. And we were able to, you know, it just took dedication. I didn't take vacations. If my kids and husband went, I stayed and worked because somebody had to be there. But, you know, we were able to arise to the challenges. And believe me, there were plenty of challenges. But, you know, I really loved dealing with the people. And I grew up working for my dad and his business. So I kind of had people skills in a way that were kind of baked in, you know. So I feel humbled and really actually grateful that I went through and did the BEP. And now I'm 73 and, you know, I can look back on it and think, you know, each generation has its own challenges. But for us, you know, before pre-internet, that was interesting, you know, and a lot of times as technology broadened, you know, we went with the technology. Let's see, let me. And one of the points that I wanted to kind of reflect on was we had a lot of cultural diversity in our team of employees. And one of my best employees was a lady that grew up out in the Aleutians. Her parents worked for a fish processing, but she stuck with me. She showed up every day for work. And believe me, I was grateful. So, you know, of course, there were situations where it didn't work out, but oh well, you know, you just go on. But I think, you know, I just have to say, you know, it's a good path to success, but it is very challenging. And so anyway, see if I got everything here. So I don't have too much else to say. If you have any questions, you know, you can, I'd be happy to answer the best that I can. But, you know, if it wasn't for the Center for the Blind, DVR, and all the people that I met over the years, you know, we worked out our issues and we were able to push forward and we were able to put out a good product in our cafeteria. And we did a turkey dinner every Thursday and we peeled the potatoes. It was all, you know, regular. We had a huge kitchen, 5,000 square foot facility, and it was big and it took a lot of cleaning. But, you know, after we left the federal building, my husband took a job for TSA down in Juneau, and everybody'd come up and say, gee, I wish you guys were still there. We really miss those turkey dinners. But, you know, I felt like it was a way that you could problem solve putting out a good meal. You know, that was my problem that I was solving every day, and people would come back and, you know, thank us. And so there were so many aspects to this socially, you know, culturally, learning to work with people. It was a remarkable journey in a lot of ways for me and my family. And so I think the world of people. In fact, my friend that's with me today does the post office vending. So, you know, that's a big job too. So, you know, but here in Anchorage, there's a lot of opportunity here. And the lady that's running the federal building cafeteria, that's a huge facility. That's even bigger than the one in Juneau. But I hear they have great food. And so anyway, but that's what it's all about. That it's a service industry. So anyway, I'm not used to public speaking. I'll tell you that right now. But anyway.
We have a question for you.
Sure.
What?
Yes. Can you hear me? Claudia, this is Charlie from Anchorage. Well, I guess it's a twofold question, but in addition to, say, cafeterias or I think Heather was doing the coffee espresso bar, I guess.
Right.
What other venues or vendors are there that may or may not necessarily be food related?
Well, there's also another avenue. Mm-hmm. There was the partnership with the military bases.
Oh, good.
And it was food related, but
right.
I worked out at Fort Rich and my part was giving SurfSafe tests. So I got that certification and that way they could do it on base. They didn't have to go off base and all of that. But you know, one of the fun things that I did every year was I went to the Sagebrush Conference in Las Vegas or Reno, and you would get to talk to people from other states. And for me, the most fun was just sitting around visiting with all the different people around the U.S. and what they did. But there's so many different, I think BEP is branching out in a lot of other areas, maybe doing other types of work, let's say laundromat or whatever. But there's a lot of need for service people that really like, you know, doing service-related work. But it is challenging when you have low vision. Believe me, I knew where to put the bill on top of the register. People, you know, would come through and say, oh, I gave you 50. Well, yeah. Here's your 20. So,
okay.
But I mean, you know, it's just, you know, you kind of had to have almost thick skin, but that's just part of life.
Sure.
And I'm here now because of the success that the program has generated for generations of people.
I guess so, the next question, or maybe the other part of my question is, do you know of other states, other coastal states, or is there any talk, say, here in Alaska of say, having something that might be connected with the blue economy, you know, about the ocean related, whether it's, you know,
you mean environmental?
Environmental, say, you know, upcycling marine debris. Such
yeah,
as,
there may, you know, there's so many different areas that people could go into through the Business Enterprise Program for, you know, setting it up. But it's a complicated program also. But there's California is one of the leaders.
Yes.
You know, they have one of the biggest vending program, Sacramento.
Oh, gosh.
I met a lot of the people.
Oh, goodness. I'm going to be visiting down there soon.
You know, so they had all the federal buildings and maybe a lot of the state buildings. And here, I mean, over the years, people have tried. So they've opened up a new facility in Palmer. Well, it's not really new now, but the FAA was one site. The National Guard Armory was a site. When I was in the program in the 90s, there were 11 people in the Business Enterprise Program in Alaska. So there's a site in Harold. I can't think of his last name now, but he does a site in Fairbanks. And Harry. Okay.
Yeah. Harry
okay.
Luke.
Harry Luke. That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's and, with us here today.
Oh, okay. Well, he's probably, him and Jim Schwartz are probably two of the people that have been in the program and are still working at it, and they're in their 70s. So you don't have to retire at 65. Oh, nice. So, you know, you have your own business. You're an entrepreneur, kind of. But, you know, you still, the thing that I was grateful for was, in a way, the business enterprise program, you didn't have to pay rent in the building. So some of your overhead was not included. So you had a little more wiggle room to do what you wanted to do and how you wanted to run it, you know, and I really appreciated that. But anyway,
thank you.
Well, thank you. And so
I have a question.
Sure.
Let me come up to the microphone.
Okay. And it's kind of down my height.
So I've noticed that the BEP program, the Alaska Center for the Blind, and also Hadley has joined in cahoots to make things more accessible. And before, you used to have a degree to get involved with the BEP program, and now it's a matter of completing courses through Hadley. Could you explain that a little bit to us?
Now, I attended a few of the, I haven't done any of the Hadley. That kind of came along later. After, I left the program in 2013, but all of Hadley has a great bunch of tutorials out there, and they, you know, are additionally, you know, you can get a lot of good support from them also. So,
fully accessible. And again, through the Center for the Blind, working with DVR and the BEP program and Hadley, I know we've produced several clients that are now working in the BEP program.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a Miss Carol Farrell who here is now and with the BEP program. Yes, Carol? Yeah. So, you're producing some good stock. So,
well, the BEP program in Alaska has several benefits that other states may not have, but they helped with people going to conferences. And so that was really good, you know, and it made it affordable. They made it affordable for people to be able to go. So, you know, it's just a matter of what kind of things you want to do. But it is a challenging program also. So,
but it's available and it is accessible. And you mentioned going to different conferences. When I go to my Ski for Light events, there's several individuals that I ski with from California that are BEP entrepreneurs, and that's what funds their skiing trips and stuff. So it's great to meet others that have gotten involved with the program and that are flourishing and prospering from it. So
so you can have anything from a small dry stand, or you could do military contracting with a partnership, or you know, there's a wide range of possibilities for people. And I don't think, you know, back in the 70s, when I was going to school, I went to the Lions World Center for the Blind in Little Rock, and they had several different options, but I took computer programming. I shouldn't have, but I did. I finished it, but it wasn't, after all, my real cup of tea back then, but they didn't really encourage people to go into BEP. But I think BEP, you know, a lot of the venues that they had, like tax service representatives, you would have to move to whatever city that job was located in. And we knew we were coming up to Alaska. So that's why I picked programming, but actually I never worked in that field, but it did help me in other ways.
Thank you, Claudia. So, anyway. Thank you very much.